you, one of the things I did, I did pleasurable things, was to travel a lot. I went to London 15 different times. I enjoyed it so. I really loved going there. I liked going to the Orient. I was there 3 times. I went to Scandinavia. I went to South America. So working as I did gave me the opportunity to have these things that I wouldn't have had otherwise if I hadn't worked and made money enough that I could travel.
How long after you were married to Tad Greenberger did he die?
We were married 12 and a half years.
12, that's not very long.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm.
So you were really a widow, working on
life.
Your own most
mm-hmm.
of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you view your accomplishments, your successes, your failures?
Well, I feel that there's nothing women can't do. I feel that anything a man can do, I'm not saying a woman can do it better, but I think that there are many ways in which women add touches to their work, to their assignments, to whatever field that they're in, that men don't approach. They do need a woman's touch. And incidentally, may I give you 2 other names of women who are friends of mine that I believe do very rare things in Pittsburgh. One is Bernie Pricer. Do you know Bernice Pricer?
Is she the one advertising?
Yes. She is the one, she's the best woman advertising person in Pittsburgh. She's gotten awards for that and all. She lives on Wallingford Street. And the brightest gal with the best sense of humor you can imagine. Get her up on a podium and have her talk. And it's just a pleasure to be there listening. And the other one is Rita Gould. Do you know Rita?
Yes, certainly.
Well, manager of a TV guide. And believe it or not, she's taking me away on Saturday to New York because I'm going... I had plans with my niece and Rita and sister-in-law that we were going to go to New York for just a weekend to see how I would make out being away on a weekend. I use a cane now.
Oh,
so we wanted to see how I would function and so forth. And she's still taking me. My niece is meeting us in New York.
That's exciting.
Yeah. But those 2 women are really... people that that are unusual, very, very bright ladies.
As a woman with your own business, did you have trouble financing yourself when you needed finances? How were you able to start out as a woman without credit?
Well, credit I had.
I see, okay.
Credit I had. And my husband, after all, had accounts at banks, Pat had, so there was no problem about that.
Were people reluctant to support you because you were a woman on your own?
No. I see, I mentioned that several companies had wanted me to come work for them.
Mm-hmm.
I would mention the names, except I don't think I should. But they were companies that are still in existence today. But one of them, as a matter of fact, has reached the multi-million dollar class many years ago, and I could have joined them so easily because they had no residential office in their real estate company and felt the need of it. But I preferred to be on my own. I really loved being the one person that had the whole thing tied up so that if anything went wrong, I'd know it was my fault, not an agent's. But I became friendly with contractors, suggested them for remodeling and repairs, only if I knew that they were good and did a good job, because I wouldn't recommend anybody that did a bum job. I thought too much of my customers to allow them to be hurt in any way. I just enjoyed meeting people. I loved people. I loved having lunch with them or dinner with them or sitting with them and just talking. And I had people who have called me like from the islands, who picked up a magazine or something and happened to see my name and number, and maybe they were being transferred by Westinghouse or something to Pittsburgh, called me, and I sold a number of people that way. One man even told me he liked my name. I didn't know what there was to like particularly about Blanche Greenberger as a name, but all along, people were nice to me. Everybody, they were cooperative. The people in the field, very, very cooperative. And customers can be a little hard to take sometimes, a little on the rough side and a little demanding, but you have to be patient. And I found that everything worked out.
Yeah.
I did very well. I really did very well.
What about the advertising? The real estate market was very classical and subtle in its advertising, and then it changed suddenly. How did you do that, and how did you come along with it? In other words, instead of just describing the house, they started to be more dramatic.
Well, there was a lot of false advertising that I didn't go for. Every time you picked up the ads of certain offices, I mean, everything was gorgeous, and everything was beautiful, and everything was fabulous, and the adjectives kept getting bigger and bigger and more spread out and all that. To me, that was phony advertising. I liked something to really state that here is a very nice home, excellent as a family home, plenty of room for children to play in, a nice yard for children to have a backyard and a swing and stuff like that. Facts. I guess you used the word facts before, that you got a lot of facts. And really, that was the way I conducted the advertising, a factual kind of advertising.
You know, you were a pioneer, being one of the first three women brokers.
Yeah.
And you think of pioneers as having problems and having roadblocks.
I didn't. But mainly that was because if there were roadblocks, I always sat down and analyzed them and tried to figure out in what way these roadblocks were going to interfere with the purchase or sale of a house, and what could I do to straighten it out. And that's the way the people were trained who worked with me. They were awfully, awfully good people.
I don't mean to color this interview any way at all, but, you know, aren't there any failures, frustrations, inhibitions?
Yes, sure. Sure, there were frustrations. Every now and then you hired somebody who didn't turn out to be what you thought she was going to be. I had mainly women, I want you to know, as agents. I found that they were hardworking. I found that they were anxious to make a buck. The women were more ambitious about making money than the men were. It was a very interesting thing to see and to watch. I always encouraged people to open up offices and become brokers and run a real estate office, because I felt it was necessary in our community that there be good, solid individuals behind every house that ever went up for sale. Sold houses, at that time, what was, even today it's a little bit big. But I mean, you know, it's nothing for a house to cost over $100,000 anymore. Most houses that are decent and good locations and so forth bring $200,000 and $300,000 now. That didn't used to be the case. And it used to be, originally, when I went into the business, if you had sales of that amounted to $30,000, you figured you were doing real well. But that's gone by the wayside, because houses in outlying streets of Greenfield, of Minidea School area and so forth are bringing $90,000 and $95,000. I mean, nobody ever dreamt that would happen. It's an interesting thing that's happened with real estate.
When I it seems like when I ask you for lemons, you make lemonade. No sooner I ask you to to tell about a roadblock or something, you turn it into something very positive.
Yeah, well,
and I think you accentuate hard work.
Yes, I do. I believe
and that solves.
I believe that there's nothing that hard work can't solve.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, the people that you work with are the important thing. And our customers are really such nice people for the most part. Wonderful. I know that over the years there have been customers that have said, now remember me, if this ever turns up or that turns up, don't hesitate to call me, even if it's at night, even if it's a holiday, whatever. You know?
You had their trust and confidence.
I like people. I always like people.
Yes.
Got along with them. I, my family now, my two nieces and my nephew, have turned to me. They don't have their mother to turn to anymore, and they've turned to me, and I'm Auntie B, you know?
What advice would you give people today?
It is a very different world than the one I grew up in. It's a much faster moving world. Everybody's got to make their own way. Everybody, if he really wants to make it, he has to depend on his own resources rather than somebody else's. That doesn't mean that you don't give a helping hand where it must be given or should be given. But I think young people are very nice young people for the most part. And you just have to accept them with their warts and everything else.
Do you have any comment on the women's lib movement?
Well, I'm not completely in 100% approval of everything they do or ask for or militate for. I think in a lot of ways they've hurt themselves because men maybe don't feel the same way about... well, I met Betty Friedan. Maybe that's the reason, you know? I met her several times when she was a speaker at conventions that I attended. I heard her. She's a dynamic woman. I didn't always agree with her, as I say. Women took away some feminine things from themselves with women's lib that I think was not always to their advantage.
You be more specific?
Well, I can still picture Betty Friedan, very, very pregnant, like 9 months pregnant, and she was a guest speaker at a Dean of Women's convention in some city that I don't remember anymore. And there were all these, for the most part, single teachers, and there was this gal who was pregnant way out to here, and pounding the desk and pounding facts into these women that I don't think who wanted to hear these facts. But it was an interesting thing for me. Interesting. I had the opportunity to meet a lot of deans of women from various colleges and universities, and I found most of them interesting women and helpful women. But there were always the women that didn't care for a Betty Friedan or who had strict rules and regulations that they wanted carried out. There weren't always the ones that their young women students liked. But generally, I'm going to tell you, I've lost two husbands. I have had this terrible thing happen to me with the arteriogram. But I would say, generally, that my life's been pretty good.
Who could you speak bad about? Or what could you speak bad about?
I really can't. because I know that if someone isn't doing something that ordinarily I would consider right and proper, I'd look for the reason that it was happening. I just wouldn't take for granted that they just weren't worth my time, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not a goody two-shoes, but I believe in giving people chances, and maybe sometimes second and third chances.
How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, I know there are some cute gravestones that have cute sayings on them all around, because I've heard people tell me about them. But I just would like to be remembered as somebody who cared about others. That's all.
Marcia?
We have a note, something about the stained glass windows at the Tree of Life. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, when they built the synagogue and they were trying to raise money, and one of the ways I understand is the churches and synagogues usually sell stained glass windows. So I talked to the executive director up there about buying one for my family, and I did. And my parents' names and my brother's name were on the stained glass window. Then when my husband Gerald died, I talked to them about adding him, and it was kind of, you know, a little costly and everything, but I decided there was no better place to put my money. So that's it. And as a matter of fact, just this week I called them because I wanted to know about putting my sister-in-law Louise's name on the glass window, and it turns out that the executive director is touring Israel right now with members of the congregation. But I don't even know if it can be done, but if it can, I will. My brother made a remark to me, however, when I told him that that was what I was going to be doing. He said, be sure that you're leaving enough room for yourself. So.
Are you active in the Tree of Life? Have you ever been active?
Active with money.
You were too busy to be active otherwise.
Mm. Though one of the women I knew quite well became the first president of Tree of Life, first woman president. Now she's somebody I think.
Hilda Crime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You belong to Tree of Life?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm very friendly with a lot of the women that belong there and who always had more time than I to devote to the affairs of a synagogue.
Women who were very active in business, as you were, sometimes felt themselves pulled in so many directions because they wanted to be more active in other things.
Yeah.
Did you feel that conflict?
No.
That you were so happy?
I just found that I could work it, everything in. I guess you can make it enough time for anything that you really care about and that you want to do. It may not be as much time as you would have given were you not working that way. But I'll tell you, I had something happen recently that upset me a little bit. Someone that I had known at Pitt, I was told, was at the Jewish home and hospital. And I went to visit her with another friend, the one who had told me she was there. I couldn't understand why she was there. She has what are reputed to be wealthy children. She had a husband who was a professional. And she had sisters that I thought would have perhaps kept her in her apartment with a companion or something. And you know, I visited her, and this woman, who had been a housewife all her life, seemed happy, seemed quite happy. And it kind of shook me up for a little while, because I knew that as a single girl, when she was at Pitt, her family was reputed to be quite well-to-do, and that she and her sisters could have anything they ever wanted. And I just didn't understand her being at the Jewish home and hospital. But people can accommodate themselves, can't they, to almost anything.
Not everybody can.
That's true. That's very true.
My
companion, incidentally, is the mother of the girl my nephew married, and they both worked at Franklin Federal. That's how they met. And my nephew lives down in Florida where he works for a savings loan, as he did with Franklin. And she's looking forward to seeing them. She and I are going to go down for a couple of weeks.
Well, let's go back to Franklin Federal, because as I said, it started out, tell me how it started out when your husband founded it and the changes.
My husband and like three or four men founded it, and it was like the lower part of the hill, the residential part off Fifth Avenue. They opened it up because there was no savings and loan downtown there. And there were businessmen on Forbes Street and Fifth Avenue that needed the services of a savings and loan. So they opened that up, and it was successful, and it was very something that the men really poured themselves into. None of them missed the meetings that were held every week. And they all had an opportunity to really speak their piece. And it was a very good relationship that they all had. Did you know Sam Weiner from the luggage company? No? Well, he was one of the presidents of the savings and loan. My husband was their lawyer until he died. And the board members said to me, too bad you weren't through law school, because had you been through law school and taken your bars, we could have given you his position. Well, that was after the fact, you know. I mean, my husband had died. But they came, Pat and the members of the board, who were quite minded to grow, decided they wanted to be in Squirrel Hill. So they opened up that branch at Forbes and Murray.
Did you know the date?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't. And then they were taken over at a later date by First Federal. And but they had the one at Forbes Street near Waldorf, you know, and then they had the one on, there was another one that they had opened up.
Across
on Hazelwood,
oh,
near Hazelwood, and Greenfield.
Yeah, mm-hmm, you're right.
And they opened that. They did have two non-Jewish members on their board, very nice men, and I think that there was talk already about not enough blacks, not enough this, that, and the other thing, that they probably decided, now this is a guess on my part, that they decided that they should have more than an all-Jewish membership on the board. They were nice people too, those men, because they were men who had businesses elsewhere, and that were willing to get, of course they got paid. Donald Plung, the accountant, was one of them. In later years, George Levinson, who had his own engineering business in the Union Trust Building, was one of the members. As a matter of fact, he gave my nephew his job. They were nice people, nice solid businessmen.
What changes in women or girls have you noticed via your relationship to your sorority?
Well, I can tell you that when I used to visit chapters and they understood that I was working and still active in the groups nationally, it gave them an idea that there wasn't anything they couldn't do either. That the whole world was open to them. It was very nice to see what happened to these young girls. I still hear from some of them. As a matter of fact, I got an invitation to come to Santa Fe, New Mexico. One of the girls that I had met, who was from Alabama, she had been in the Alabama chapter, had moved there when she married, and she had two sons who were in college. And she's writing me that she's planning to come up to Pittsburgh for the convention next year. I have nice contacts with the girls in Pittsburgh who are still here and who have an active chapter. What changes? Well, they can go into all kinds of fields. For example, Judy Resnick was an A-Vi. She was a Carnegie Mellon, bright girl, beautiful girl. I used to come, and when I would visit her, I used to sit and wait for maybe a few minutes until I would hear her coming, and she'd play the grand, and that was in the living room of the apartment. And she played beautifully, and I loved it. But there she was, who went into electric engineering. Stunning girl, very attractive and very bright. We invite the members of the Pittsburgh chapter to always come to our functions. We don't charge them anything. They go in for free. The alumni, you know, will pay a share of what the costs were for dinner and stuff like that. But our chapters are no longer just Jewish. About a dozen or 15 years ago, the line was broken between all the Jewish and non-Jewish groups. The non-Jewish started taking the Jewish girls in order to fill their beds in their house. They didn't care particularly, I think, about how important it was to take the girl purely on her own standing. But they had to fill their houses, so pretty soon we saw a lot of activity on the part of non-Jewish groups rushing the Jewish girls. Some Jewish girls felt flattered that they were wanted by non-Jewish groups, but most of them, for the most part, preferred being in a Jewish climate. And the alumni always helped help with that climate by seeing the girls and visiting with them and going to their functions and helping them participate in what went on at the university and so forth.
Do you see this change as being good?
Well, the alumni don't like it. The alumni look back and realize what they got from it and how happy they were. And I'll tell you, if you ever want to tell a Jewish joke or something, you have to kind of stop. Because you can't always make these girls feel that because they're not Jewish, things are being said, you know? We had Esther Lapidus up there one time to give some of her skits at one of the alumni affairs that we were sponsoring. And I'll tell you, it was not only that the Gentile girls didn't understand it. There were plenty of Jewish girls that didn't, but they loved it anyhow. You know, they'll be bringing her back again.
Did you ever serve on any boards of directors at any other, or any community, or any?
I wasn't into that kind of thing. I gave them money. I gave them dues. I gave them belonging the national. Memberships, you know,
mm-hmm.
I would pay for that. But that just never interested me. But I know a number of the girls who were presidents of Hadassah and council and so forth. And I applauded their efforts in any way I could.
What about businesses? Did any business ever approach you to be
yes.
on their boards?
Yes. It the Motelist, the East End Motelist, the regular Montalist that works out of North Hills. I was on two of their boards, I think. But I'll tell you something. I really, I don't know how to say it without sounding...
No, don't be afraid.
There's something different about them. Individually, they were very fine, but sometimes in a group, I don't know how to put it in words. I was constantly on the board of the East End Montalists. It went on for years. I was had various offices that I held.
Are we at the end of the tape, Chuck?
York City. And in the plane, I was reading the newspaper that I had brought along, and I saw the picture of a man in Oakland who was complaining about the university not giving them enough money for the housing that he and people had in Oakland, and he felt that the university was taking advantage of them. And I looked and read it again, and it gave his address. So I wrote him a letter from the plane and told him when I would be back. And I said, I will call you on Sunday at such and such a time in order to discuss with you the article that is in today's paper. And I did. And I found out that he lived in a row of houses on each side of the street. There were lots of people.